Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times. Check out these things to do in San Angelo. Published July 13th. Calendar listings are published free on a space available basis. Submit entries to events@gosanangelo.com. If an item must be published on a specific day, an advertisement is required. Be sure to check availability as some events are canceled due to COVID. July 16th, Children's Storytime with Joe begins at 11 a.m. at Old Town Books, 506 South Chadburn Street. People can also view on the store's Facebook page. Concert. J. Boy Adams and Zenobia return to the Odeon Theater in Mason, along with the friends and guest, Saturday, July 16th at 7 p.m. Advance tickets for this performance are $25 and may be purchased online at www.theodeontheater.com. Tickets purchased at the box office are $30. For more information, you can call 325-347-6781. July 19th, Social Club. The San Angelo Women's Social Club will meet to play Pinochet at 11 a.m. at Riverview Restaurant, 800 West Avenue D. Dutch treat lunch. Guests are welcome. For more, call 512-627-8574. Open mic night is at 8 p.m. to midnight on Tuesdays at the Penny Tap House, 2412 College Hills Boulevard. This series is hosted by Nathan Vinson. July 20th, Odeon Preservation Association's Classic Movie Night begins at 7 p.m. at the Odeon Theater in Mason. For information, call Dennis Evans at 325-347-6781 or Penny Maines at 661-248-2431. Teen Night at the Tavern is from 7 to 11 p.m. on Wednesdays at Chadburn Tavern, 115 South Chadburn Street. DJ Lil Mario will play music for youth with an $8 cover charge. There is no re-entry if you leave. Attendees must be 13 years and older. No one over 21 is allowed unless you are a parent or chaperone. Once you are an approved chaperone, you get in free. There will not be any alcohol served. For more info, call 325-212-4935. PTSD Group for Gulf War, Iraq, Afghanistan, and First Responders is set for 6 to 7 p.m. at 202 Henry O. Flipper Street. The All Veterans Council of Tom Green County and the Colonel Michael Rader DAV Chapter 237 recognizes the need and feels that veterans and first responders now more than ever need support, according to the event listing. July 23rd, Children's Storytime with Joe begins at 11 a.m. at Old Town Books, 506 South Chadburn Street. People can also view on the store's Facebook page. July 26th, Social Club. The Angelo Women's Social Club will meet to play bridge at 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. at the Main Street Cafe in the Baptist Retirement Community at 903 North Main. Dutch treat lunch. Beginners are welcome. For more information, call 512-217-9780. July 27th, Social Club. The Angelo Women's Social Club will meet for monthly luncheon at 11 a.m. at Catfish Corner, 1313 West Beauregard. Dutch treat, guests are welcome. For more, call 325-374-0099. San Angelo's Municipal Pool Reopens to Public by Paul Harris, published July 12th. The municipal pool will officially reopen at noon, Tuesday, July 12th. The pool, located at 18 East Avenue A, will be open for public swimming from noon to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday through Labor Day, and will be closed every Monday for maintenance. Admission is $5 per person for ages 3 to 64, $3 for ages 65 plus, and free for ages 2 and younger. The summer opening was delayed due to the pool's filtration system needing to be replaced, which was further complicated by supply chain issues, according to a release from the City of San Angelo. Pool party reservations will be accepted beginning Wednesday, July 13th. Reservations must be made between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in the recreation offices at Santa Fe Crossing, 702 South Chadbourne Street. Private party rentals. Private parties may be reserved any day of the week. Time slots are 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. and 8:45 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. Some dates may be unavailable because of public events at the pool. Private parties, 1 to 100 people, $250. 101 to 200 people, $350. 201 to 300 people, $450. 301 to 400 people, $550. A $100 deposit is also required, plus the initial fee stated above. All fees are due when the reservation is made. Cancellation fees may apply. Semi-private party rentals. Semi-private parties, during which the pool remains open to the public, cost $20 per hour, plus $3 per person. There is a two-hour minimum for semi-private parties. All fees are due when the reservation is made. Cancellation fees may apply. San Angelo Nature Center offers a world of knowledge for animal lovers. By Charles Bryce, published July 9th. If you've never checked out the San Angelo Nature Center, you're missing out on what some people call a hidden gem. It's the closest thing that San Angelo has to a zoo, with exhibits of all kinds of creatures. Snakes, tarantulas, exotic birds, reptiles, turtles, scorpions, a bobcat, a fox, and more. There is a large collection of animals, exhibits, and information native to the Southwest, and creatures from all over the planet as well. Our newest addition currently is our albino Burmese python, said Selena McSherry, the facility's recreation coordinator. We had Baby, our old Burmese python, for years and years and years. She passed away a few months ago. So he'll grow to be as big as she was, and he's already pretty large as it is. His name is Brutus. He's somewhere between 5 and 7 years old, and he's pretty hefty and very interested, always wanting to see what's going on. Even though a lot of the animals are native to this area, the Nature Center doesn't go out and catch them, as some people might think. A lot of the animals that we currently have at one time were people's pets, McSherry said. They say, oh no, we didn't know what we were thinking. Or it could be the fact that they're moving to a different place and they need a home for their animal. Some of our animals were rescues that could not be released back into the wild. The animal of the month for July is the Daegu. We have three small Daegus that are absolutely adorable, McSherry said. They look like a mix between a rat and a chinchilla. They play, they love their running wheel, and they pretty much chew everything up. Even if you have a phobia about certain animals or wildlife, the Nature Center can help ease those feelings. Whether you're a kid or an adult, a lot of times you have kids that come in who are terrified, and we don't want them to be terrified, McSherry said. We want them to understand what the animals and critters do for our ecosystem and everything involved. But we also want to say, this is probably a dangerous thing that you want to stay away from out in the wild, or anything like that. When children and adults get acquainted with the animals a little bit, it can change their way of thinking. It's so great when they walk out with these big smiles and they want to come back, and that's what we're shooting for, McSherry said. We want them to be able to go out in the wild and say, oh, I know what that is, and I know what that is for and what it does. That's our goal here at the Nature Center. There are 35 snakes on exhibit, more than any other creatures at the Nature Center, which is home for 75 to 100 forms of wildlife overall. One of McSherry's personal favorites is Emma, a Chaco golden knee tarantula. She's just gorgeous, McSherry said. The birds, including cockatiels and a macaw, you can't not like them. They're so loud, and they demand the attention. McSherry has worked at the Nature Center for about 6 years, and she has a real passion for her job. I absolutely love it, she said. You know, you're working with animals. It's not as repetitive as people think. There's something new every day, and getting to work with the community and other organizations, it's a lot of fun. The Nature Center is a little off the beaten path, nestled away at 7409 Knickerbocker Road at Lake Nasworthy. Not too many people know about us, but once they do, they come back and they do enjoy the place, McSherry said. If you're looking for a great deal for taking the kids or grandkids this summer without having to leave the Concho Valley, the Nature Center might be the answer. General admission tickets are $3 for adults and $2 for children. Children 3 and under are admitted free of charge. It's a very reasonable price, McSherry said. You get to come in here and look at all the animals. We take a lot of the animals out of their cages or glass tanks, so you can get up close and personal with them. So it's a great educational tool, but also a very fun experience for kids of all ages. We do offer birthday parties and tours as well. Having a birthday party here and having all the kids getting to see and touch all these animals, it's so much fun for the kids. The Nature Center is open Tuesdays through Saturdays from noon to 5 p.m. For more information, call the center at 325-942-0121. And now, here is a Texas story that was published in the San Angelo Standard-Times. Understaffed and under federal investigation, Texas Juvenile Detention Center halts intake, by Jolie McCulloch, Texas Tribune, published July 8th. Texas's Juvenile Detention Center has shut its doors and won't accept any new kids because it's hemorrhaging staff, and officials fear they can't ensure the safety of the nearly 600 youths already in their custody. According to a Texas Justice Department letter released to the Texas Tribune on Wednesday, the state's five youth lockups were implementing emergency protocols as the staffing strength at each secure facility becomes more grim. The current risk is that the ongoing secure facility staffing issue will lead to an inability to even provide basic supervision for youth locked in their rooms, Chandra Carter, the agency's interim director, wrote to juvenile probation leaders across the state last week. This could cause a significantly impaired ability to intervene in the increasing suicidal behaviors already occurring by youth struggling with the isolative impact of operational room confinement. The agency has 331 vacant positions for juvenile corrections officers and only 391 officers available to cover its facilities, an agency spokesperson said Thursday. Minors sentenced to severe sentences at a TJJD facility will remain at local detention facilities, many of which have their own shortage of beds. In her letter, Carter said 130 juveniles were waiting in county facilities before intake was halted. Carter said the agency is trying to restart intake as soon as possible by shifting people into different units, stopping intensive intervention programs for those who have committed violent crimes, and looking into whether any youths could be eligible for release. Texas's juvenile lockups have long been plagued by physical and sexual abuse and dangerous environments for youths detained there. In October, the U.S. Department of Justice announced it was investigating whether the agency provides reasonable protection from physical and sexual abuse by staff and other residents, excessive use of chemical restraints, and excessive use of isolation. Carter was appointed to run the agency by the Texas Juvenile Justice Board in April when former director Camille Kane quit without notice after 4 years at the helm. Hours before Kane's departure was made public, Governor Greg Abbott announced he was taking money from her troubled agency to continue funding Operation Lone Star, his multi-billion-dollar border security operation. Kane, who previously worked for Abbott, has not publicly discussed the reasons for her departure. Records obtained by the Tribune show Kane requested $31,225,360 in coronavirus relief funds from Abbott's office in April, weeks before the governor took the same amount of money from her agency. In a statement, TJJD said Thursday that the funds transferred out of their hands by Abbott had a net zero budget impact. A spokesperson said the agency had used federal coronavirus relief funds to pay salaries that would typically have come from their general revenue. Once those expenditures from the federal dollars were made, we returned the same amount of funds from our general revenue, TJJD spokesperson Barbara Kessler said in the statement. On Thursday afternoon, an Abbott spokesperson said the transfer of funds only acted as a placeholder and did not impact the agency's operational budget in any way. The safety and security of TJJD staff and youth is a top priority for Governor Abbott, spokesperson Renee Ease said in a statement. Under Interim Director Carter's leadership, TJJD is implementing permanent raises to address the urgent issue of understaffing at facilities and ensure they remain secure and safe. A month before Abbott announced he was transferring money out of TJJD to fund Operation Lone Star, Carter, then TJJD's Deputy Executive Director for State Services, told an agency counsel that the youth lockups were over capacity in terms of staff-to-youth ratio. Only one facility was taking new detainees, she said, according to the meeting minutes. Others were often unable to provide educational or therapeutic programming, and they were regularly in lockdown because of staffing shortages. In December, she said staff assessed youth for suicide concerns 1,000 times. In recent years, Texas counties and cities have sent fewer and fewer minors to TJJD, instead holding them close to home or sentencing them to probation. In May, fewer than 600 youths were being held at TJJD's secure facilities, according to a state report, a number which has dropped significantly in the last decade. For advocates who have pushed to close state-run youth lockups, the staffing crisis only points to the need for a new approach to juvenile justice. Advocates have long requested counties handle the youth justice system and hope the ongoing staffing crisis in a time with fewer youth in lockups will push the state to rethink the system when the agency goes under legislative review next year. We already had a backlog of services. They didn't have enough people to provide the therapy youth needed, said Brett Murfish, director of youth justice at Texas Appleseed. How extreme does it have to be to say, okay, we have to do something different? Angelo State receives $2.3 million gift to renovate auditorium. By Paul Harris, published July 13th. Local philanthropist and arts enthusiast Elta Joyce McAfee has donated $2.3 million to Angelo State University to help fund the restoration and renovation of its university auditorium, which will be renamed the Elta Joyce Murphy Auditorium in her honor. Located inside ASU's Mayor Administration Building, the 8,205-square-foot auditorium will undergo extensive improvements, including renovations to the lobby, stage, and back-of-house theater, installation of a theater and audiovisual support room, expansion of the restrooms, and updates to the auditorium entrance. Supporting Angelo State has always been very important to me, McAfee said. To have the opportunity to make an impact, not just on campus and the students, but on a facility that hosts many of the wonderful arts at ASU events, is meaningful in so many ways. I have always loved the arts, and I'm just so pleased that I can support this project that will mean so much to the students and the audiences who come watch them perform. A longtime supporter of the arts in West Texas, McAfee was a founding member of the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts and led fundraising efforts to support the former San Angelo Civic Ballet's first performance of the Nutcracker in 1983. She has also been involved with the San Angelo Symphony Board for more than 50 years and has supported many other organizations, including Angelo Civic Theater, San Angelo Junior League, House of Faith, and Baptist Memorial Hospital. In 2016, McAfee was named the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce's Citizen of the Year for her numerous contributions to the community. The San Angelo City Auditorium was renamed the Elta Joyce Murphy Performance Hall and Stage in her honor after she helped fund significant renovations. Like the former city auditorium, ASU's auditorium is being commemorated under McAfee's maiden name of Murphy to honor her contribution and her family. Mrs. McAfee's love of the arts and generosity of spirit are well known in San Angelo and on the ASU campus, said ASU President Ronnie Hawkins Jr. But we are still blown away by her latest act of kindness because of the many ways it will benefit the ASU Ram family and the community as a whole. Thanks to her, ASU will once again have a beautiful and modern venue to host concerts, theater productions, distinguished lectures, and many other types of events for the campus and the public, and we are proud that it will carry the Elta Joyce Murphy name. McAfee's contribution to the auditorium renovations is also just the latest example of her long-standing support of ASU. She has been a member of the ASU's President's Circle since 1980, supports ASU Athletics at the annual Phil George Blue and Gold Dinner and Auction, and has contributed to the ASU Friends of Art and Music Entertainment, FAME, Scholarship Endowment. She also supports the ASU Friends of the Library and the ASU Office of the Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health. Renovations to ASU's newly named Elta Joyce Murphy Auditorium are tentatively scheduled to begin in the spring of 2023 and are expected to take about a year to complete. And now here are a few sports articles. Erien County's Trevin Coffle wins FFA Rodeo Tie-Down Roping Average by Amy McDaniel, published July 13th. Erien County High School's Trevin Coffle won the average in tie-down roping Tuesday at the Texas FFA Rodeo in Fort Worth. Coffle, who also plays football, basketball, and runs track, received a $1,000 scholarship and a gift certificate and prize buckle from Cavenders for winning the average at the 28th staging of the event. He clocked 10.27 seconds to win the first go-round by more than 1.5 seconds over the second-best roper. His time of 11.01 was good enough for second place in the second go-round. He clocked 10.91 in the short go. The rising senior is a preseason All-State selection at Spreadback by Texas Football Magazine. The Hornets are ranked number 10 in preseason by the magazine. As a junior, Coffle helped the Hornets to the UIL State Basketball Tournament for the first time since 1961. and also qualified to the UIL state meet in the 300-meter hurdles. He was also All-West Texas selection at all three sports last year for the Hornets. He also earned All-State honors in football and basketball. Water Valley's Cannon Weiss closes career with Whirlwind All-State Tour, All-Star Tour by Amy McDaniel, published July 13th. Former Water Valley High School football standout Cannon Weiss is saying goodbye to football for a second time. This time, it's on his own terms. Weiss, who was named the All-West Texas Six-Man Most Valuable Player after powering the Wildcats to their best season since 2012, has already played in three All-Star games over the summer. He'll suit up one final time Friday when he plays on the East squad at the Texas Six-Man Coaches Association Division I All-Star Game at 7:30 p.m. Friday in Iowa Park. His brilliant senior season, in which the 6'1", 200-pound running back tallied almost 2,000 yards and scored 47 touchdowns, was cut short after a collarbone injury kept him out of Water Valley's only loss, a 70-49 decision to eventual state finalist May. He returned for Water Valley's run to the regional semifinals in basketball, but looked forward to a few more snaps of football before turning his attention to a geosciences degree plan at Angelo State University. After playing in the 11-man Fellowship of Christian Athletes All-Star Game, Weiss played in the Brazos Bowl in Strawn, Texas, before traveling to Lambert, Montana on July 4th for the 24th Can-Am Bowl, featuring the top six-man players from the United States and Canada. Looking back, Weiss says that he's glad to get another chance to play the game he grew up playing. "I've just enjoyed it so much," Weiss said. "I hope my kids play six-man football. It's a different world than 11-man. Its own world, but it's still football. There's a lot more hustle involved instead of talent. I've enjoyed every single bit of it and learned so much from it." Weiss will be joined by teammate Kyle Bannister, as well as Eden's Caleb Tenney and Julian Gamboa on the East squad. Water Valley and Eden were in the same district for the past 2 years. He rode from Waco to Montana with former Strawn player Griff Rigdon, who will participate in the TSMA Division II All-Star Game, and former Lingleville player Kyler Phillips and Oakwood coach Thomas Tritz, who was one of the Team USA coaches in Lambert. "I'll be friends with them for a long time," the former Wildcat said. "I've got a lot of high school friends, but meeting these people who have the same interests, it's a lot easier to talk to them and communicate." While the first Can-Am Bowl was played in 1997 in Saskatchewan, it was the first game in the series played on U.S. soil. The American players participated in an Independence Day parade, where they held their home state flags while riding on a float, and all carried American flags onto the field for the game. Players from Colorado, Montana, Nebraska, Texas, and Wyoming clashed with players from Alberta and Saskatchewan. The Americans won 71-30, taking their series lead to 19 wins and 5 losses. The game also broke a 2-year hiatus for the series due to COVID-19 travel restrictions. Weiss said the Canadians were only allowed to stay on American soil for 48 hours, so they arrived the day before the game. All the players and coaches boarded in Lambert School facilities. "We practiced 2 times a day, and they were pretty tough practices," Weiss said. "But the weather was so nice, and there was green grass everywhere. It was cool to meet the Canadian players. They're very similar. They just talk different. Their plays and way of playing the game is different." West Texans to suit up for TSMCA All-Star Games. It will be a goodbye of sorts for Sterling City head coach Trey Sisko, who will lead the West team in the Division I game. Sterling City was realigned into Class 2A at the last UIL realignment and will play 11-man football for at least the next 2 years. Cisco, who coached the Eagles to a state championship in 2020, opted to stay and lead the transition. Cisco's son, Will, as well as Garden City's Sebastian Balcazar, will play on the West team. There's also a Division II team scheduled for 7:30 p.m. Saturday in Iowa Park. Blackwell's Jason Rodriguez and Landon Witten will play for the West, while Richland Springs' Jaden Bryant and Zane Capps will suit up for the East team. The girls and boys basketball all-star teams will be hosted at Wichita Falls Rider. The girls' game is set for noon Saturday, followed by the boys' game at 2 p.m. In the boys' game, Very Best's Nick Martin and Eden's Zane Avance will play for the West. Very Best's Kennedy Wheelis and Robert Lee's Braylee Hood will play for the West in the girls' game, while Brinley Chandler of Richland Springs and Cindy Bond of Cherokee will play for the East. Bulls of the West returns to Spur Arena on July 16th, by Charles Bryce, published July 9th. 12 of the top freestyle bullfighters will be coming to San Angelo for the 7th annual Bulls of the West competition at the First Community Federal Credit Union Spur Arena on Saturday, July 16th. Some of the hottest Mexican fighting bulls will be in the lineup, provided by Troy and Lindsey Bradshaw, with Penthouse Fighting Bulls. Scoring-wise, half of the points will come from the bullfighters and the other half will be judged on the bulls. There will be four rounds of three competitors, and the winner of each round will advance to the short go crown the competition. The athletes will be doing flips, dip, dives, and moves to try to juke out the bulls. The event is different than Spanish-style bullfighting. It's freestyle bull riding that rodeo fans are familiar seeing with rodeo clowns. The last time this event came to town was in 2019. We didn't do it in the year of COVID, 2020. And then we decided to wait in 2021 since COVID was still kind of a thing and there were restrictions on the buildings and different things. So we just waited another year, event coordinator Jill Six said. 3 years ago, it was a very popular summer event in San Angelo. It was really good, Sisk said of the response in 2019. We were almost a packed house. Sisk's family has put the event on since 2014, including her father, Bill Halfman, along with Casey Sisk, Jason Halfman, and Taylor Halfman. The doors will open at 7 p.m., and the bullfights will start at 8 p.m. General admission tickets are $30, and they can be purchased at www.outhousetickets.com or at the ticket box office at the Spur Arena, starting 9 a.m. Saturday. VIP tables are also available for businesses and companies who want to advertise. For more information, call or text Jill Sisk at 325-450-7330. 2022 preseason Texas high school football state rankings from staff reports. Editor's note, the 2022 Dave Campbell's Texas Football Associated Press preseason rankings, as announced on texasfootball.com. Class 6A, starting with number 1, Austin Westlake, Galena Park North Shore, South Lake Carroll, Duncanville, Katy, Denton Geyer, Lake Travis, DeSoto, Spring Westfield, and finally number 10, Rockwall. Class 5A, Division 1, beginning at number 1, Longview, Denton Ryan, Aledo, College Station, Frisco Lone Star, Crosby, A&M Consolidated, Manvel, Mansfield Timberview, and number 10, Amarillo Tascosa. Class 5A, Division 2, starting with number 1, South Oak Cliff, Lovejoy, Liberty Hill, Fort Bend Marshall, Mansfield Summit, Argyle, Wichita Falls Rider, Leander Rouse, Colleyville Heritage, Texas High at number 10. Class 4A, Division 1. Number 1, Stephenville, China Spring, Tyler Chapel Hill, El Campo, Salina, Callan, Waco La Vega, Kilgore, Dumas, Kennendale. Class 4A Division 2, starting with number 1, Carthage, Gilmer, Wichita Falls Heritage, West Orange, Stark, Texarkana Pleasant Grove, Cuero, Wimberley, Glenrose, Silsby, Geronimo Navarro. Class 3A Division 1, starting with number 1, Brock, Franklin, Lorena, Mount Vernon, Jim Ned, Grandview, Malakoff, Columbus, Edna, and West. Class 3A Division 2, starting with number 1, Gunter, Canadian, Newton, Dangerfield, West Rusk, Holiday, Poth, Childress, East Bernard, DeKalb. Class 2A Division 1, starting number 1, Shiner, Timpson, Refugio, Marlin, Holly, Centerville, Crawford, Beckville, Coleman, Cisco. Class 2A Division 2, starting number 1, Albany, Munster, Mart, Wellington, Burton, Wink, Windhorst, Falls City, Chiltern, Tenaha. Class 1A Division 1, starting with number 1, Westbrook, Abbott, May, Jonesboro, Garden City, Rankin, Happy, Borden County, Turkey Valley, Irion County. Class 1A Division 2, starting with number 1, Benjamin, Balmoray, Jayton, Richland Springs, Strawn, Motley County, Witherell, Throckmorton, Klondike, Cherokee. 11-man private, starting with number 1, Dallas Parish Episcopal, Midland Christian, Fort Bend Christian, Dallas Christian, Houston Second Baptist, Plano Prestonwood, Fort Worth Nolan Catholic, San Antonio Cornerstone, Houston St. Thomas, Austin Regents. 6-man private, starting with number 1, Fort Worth Covenant Classical, Waco Live Oak, Conroe Covenant, San Marcos Baptist, Houston Emory Widener, Austin Veritas, Bulverde Bracken Christian, Lubbock Kingdom Prep, Marble Falls Faith, and Lantana Harvest Christian. And now here are a couple of feature columns. Wine Now Available in Once Rare Sizes and Materials by Gus Clemens, published July 12th. You demanded wine options. Winemakers heard you, and new options, some might call them marketing gimmicks, are being created as fast as they can be dreamed up. Moving away from 750 milliliter bottles is a big trend. Wine now comes in once rare sizes and materials: 375 milliliters, 2 pours, 187 milliliters, 1 pour containers. And there are more sizes. They come in traditional glass bottles, plastic bottles, cans, pouches, and even Tetra Paks, usually associated with milk and juice cartons. Imagination also goes into what goes into the containers. Wonder Plus Ivy, for instance, markets wines created using certified organic grapes from family-owned wineries around the world. The 187-milliliter container is glass. The closure is plastic. They offer a Chardonnay and a Cabernet Sauvignon from California, a Rosé from France, a Red Blend from Spain, and a Pinot Bianco from Italy. They sell in 8, 16, and 24-bottle sets at around $8.50 a bottle. Acceptable wine and pricey for the poor, but works if you are a one-glass person. Just Enough, lowercase name, is a similar play. Their wines come in 250-milliliter cans sold in six-packs, which is the equivalent of two standard bottles. Your choices include a red blend, a rosé, a chardonnay, and a brut sparkling. All from California, the cost is around $45 a six-pack. Bonterra offers 250-milliliter cans of their organically produced sparkling rosé, sparkling brut, Sauvignon Blanc, and rosé. All from California. The sparkling is sold in single cans for $5. The still wines in four-can packs for $18. Ubiquitous supermarket wine, 19 Crimes, offers four packs of 187-milliliter plastic bottles of their red blend and their hard Chardonnay for $10 to $12 a pack. All these deliver acceptable wine. You will not get Sublime, but you will not get Planck. Several other brands are available. Private Beach, four 200-milliliter cans. Kim Crawford, two 500-milliliter cans. Domaine Chandon Brut Rosé, 187-milliliter bottles. And Sophia, four 187-milliliter cans. For some wine drinkers, less is more. Tasting notes. Sebastiani Sonoma Valley Sauvignon Blanc 2020. Bright, lively, and refreshing. $14 to $17. Clinker Brick Bricks and Roses Rosé Lodi 2021. Provence style, but even lighter and airier. $15 to $19. Dao Vineyards Bodyguard 2019. Elegant, opulent, sophisticated, intense in color and flavor, $35 to $40. Last round. The trouble with people who consider themselves self-made is they tend to worship their creator. Wine time. Email Gus Clemens, found on Facebook, at Gus Clemens. Also the newsletter, gusclemens.substack.com. Website, gusclemenswine.com. Saving Seeds from Your Garden Can Pay Off Next Season, by Paul Harris, published July 8th. The heat, dry wind, and lack of rainfall are providing a tough environment for plants and people, so yard work and gardening have slowed down for a while. But one task to keep in mind is to collect seeds to save for the next season. Saving seeds is a great way to keep annual plants going without having to buy new plants every year, and can also be a way to increase favorite perennials throughout the yard. For vegetables that are producing crops, save seeds from the biggest, tastiest, best quality fruit to save for next year. Be aware of some important factors such as hybrid varieties and cross-pollination. It's not recommended to save seeds from hybrid vegetables, especially for more than a couple of years in a row. Hybrids are not very true to type, meaning they are more likely to have different characteristics from generation to generation. Seeds that come from vegetables that are old-fashioned or true-to-type varieties are much more likely to retain the same flavor, color, size, etc. from year to year. Also be aware of cross-pollination. Vegetables like cucurbits, squashes, melons, cucumbers, etc., peppers, carrots, and corn readily cross-pollinate, so if there are multiple varieties in the same garden or vicinity, there will be some genetic variability. It's best to physically separate from other plants or grow one variety at a time if reliable seed collection is important. Crops like peas, tomatoes, if not planted adjacent to each other, and most beans do not readily cross-pollinate. To save vegetable seeds, allow the fruit to fully ripen and mature before collecting the seeds. Allow to dry thoroughly before sorting in a cool, dry location. To collect seeds from perennial and annual flowers, stop deadheading the blooms. Deadheading is recommended through the blooming season to allow for more abundant flowering, but doesn't allow seeds to form. Allow the flowers to fade, seed pods to form, and wait until the seeds are fully mature. Seed pods that are green and moist are not ready. Wait until the pods turn brown and dry out. But don't wait too long or the seeds will drop and disperse and be gone. Many species have seeds that don't mature at the same time, but at staggered intervals, so keep an eye out every day. After collecting the seeds, correct storage techniques are abundant so that they last until the next growing season and longer. The seeds should be kept very dry and stored at cool temperatures. The silica gel packs that often come with newly purchased electronics or purses can be used to help keep the seeds dry. And there was a misprint on this article. It originally stated it was written by Paul Harris. It actually was written by Allison Watkins. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension agent for horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
From NPR. Coronavirus FAQ. Can I get COVID outdoors? By Melody Shriver, published July 1st. Outdoor events are way less risky than indoor events when it comes to COVID. They are still by far the safest way to gather as the country continues to see high levels of cases and rising hospitalizations. But way less risky is not zero risk. There's still a chance of catching COVID even at an outdoor event, especially as the virus continues evolving to become more transmissible and to break through prior immunity from vaccination or earlier cases. With the more transmissible variants, it's likely that shorter periods of close contact will result in transmission, said Dr. Preeti Malani, an infectious diseases physician and a professor of medicine at the University of Michigan. That means activities that once seemed pretty safe are potentially riskier, and that includes outdoor activities. As Maimuna Majumdar, an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and a computational epidemiologist at Boston Children's Hospital, puts it, the more transmissible a variant is indoors, the more transmissible it is in outdoor settings, too. So additional precautions during a surge like the one the U.S. is currently seeing may be in order, particularly if you are vulnerable or are in frequent contact with someone who is, say the experts interviewed for this story. People are going to make judgments based on their own level of risk and comfort, says Donald Milton, a professor of environmental and occupational health at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. But Majumdar says the transmissibility can be drastically reduced by ensuring that an outdoor event doesn't get too crowded. That means having plenty of room for guests to move around and making sure they are vaccinated, recently tested, and symptom-free is also a very good idea, she says. Here are some frequently asked questions about staying safe while gathering outdoors with family and friends. When should guests get tested? Majumdar helped her friend plan a wedding with about 100 attendees, and they have not heard of any resulting cases of COVID. First, they made sure everything was outdoors, including events that happen around the wedding, rehearsal dinners, happy hours, and so on. They reminded everyone to be up to date on vaccinations and boosters, which can help prevent transmission of the virus. They also asked guests to stay home if they were feeling any symptoms, and everyone agreed to take a rapid test right before the event. Majumdar has thrown other events and parties with similar guidelines, and so far, she's not heard of anyone getting sick. And for those who still think that you aren't contagious if you are not showing symptoms, a required pre-event test could surprise you. there have been multiple instances where folks without symptoms have tested positive, so they've stayed home, said Majumdar, who asks everyone to get rapid tested within an hour of her events. She also keeps rapid tests on hand in case someone isn't able to test before they arrive. Getting tested right before the event is key. Rapid tests are pretty good at telling someone whether they are positive and very contagious at that moment, but their status can change within hours. So if you take a rapid test in the morning, you could be contagious by night. Rapid tests aren't always foolproof. Sometimes you have a false negative, but they can be a very helpful layer of protection in addition to other precautions. There have also been times when people felt a bit off and stayed home from one of Majumdar's events, only to test positive a day or two later, which meant that they would have been contagious during the party. And in addition to monitoring symptoms, Malani says, if you add testing and vaccination to a low-risk outdoor setting, the risk of COVID becomes manageable. Do the old rules of staying safe still apply once the event gets going? Keeping a distance still helps enormously. Whether you're having a wedding or barbecue, that might mean putting families together at the same table rather than mixing them in with other guests and spacing each table a few feet apart. The 15-minute rule was developed for contact tracers to reach out to people who may have been exposed to COVID. If you're in close contact with someone for more than 15 minutes, you're likelier to get sick. But it is also possible to catch the virus in passing, especially indoors. Australian authorities reported a case last summer where someone got sick after walking by an infected person for a few seconds at a shopping mall, according to video footage. Whether you get sick at all depends on several factors: how much virus a person is emitting, what your immunity level is from vaccination or prior infection, and importantly, how much fresh air is between you. Where do masks fit in? When it comes to COVID, the outdoors are great for two main reasons. There's plenty of fresh air outside, and you have more space to keep a distance, Milton says. But if you're not able to keep a distance in a crowd, at a concert, sporting event, or protest, for instance, masking up greatly reduces the risks of getting sick. That's especially true if people are shouting and yelling. If you're near them for a long period of time and you don't know their vaccination, test, and symptom status. If you're close together, you're likely to share air with other people, says Milton. Two of his colleagues believe they caught COVID outdoors early in the pandemic, one at an outside brunch and one who was waiting in line to pick up groceries in spring 2020. There's always been a risk outdoors, Milton says. It's much lower than indoors, but it's not nothing. The closer you are physically to someone, the higher the risk. If you're close enough, say, to smell their breath, what they chose for dinner, you're close enough to inhale the viral particles on their breath. There is also the off chance of air blowing the wrong way. Just like plumes of smoke, virus-laden exhalations can travel the distance outdoors, Milton says. That means it's possible to get infected even if you're not right next to someone. But the chances of getting COVID at a distance outdoors are significantly lower than pretty much any other form of interaction, such as talking closer together or meeting indoors. I think the most important thing to remember about the outdoors is that while it's safer, it's not 100% safe, Majumdar says. The more crowded an outdoor space is, the more it begins to mimic an indoor space in terms of our exposure to shared air. But, she says, I don't think masks are necessary while outdoors, as long as the event isn't too crowded. Everyone tested negative, no one is experiencing symptoms, and everyone is up to date on their vaccinations. What if we need to go inside during an outdoor event? Even if your event is outside, people may need to go indoors briefly to use the bathroom or wash their hands, something I think many folks forget when planning an event, Majumdar says. Guests should wear a high-quality mask like an N95 or KF94 anytime they need to dash inside. Hosts can keep masks stocked and accessible for any of these indoor forays, Majumder says. Masks remain very important and very effective, Milani says, especially if you or a member of your household is high risk. Keep masks handy, not so much for outdoor use, but for when you go in and out. You can also improve ventilation and filtration indoors by opening doors and windows and running air purifiers in bathrooms or hallways. Outdoor tents that don't have side flaps enclosing the space can help protect from the sun or rain while allowing air to pass through. But if the tent is enclosed, it's not that different than being indoors, Milton says. And sometimes social gatherings end up moving indoors, Milani points out, because of bad weather, high or low temperatures, or annoying mosquitoes. And that's when transmission risk can go from low to high. Should I invite people from out of town? The nature of a big event with lots of out-of-town guests is a recipe for transmission when cases are high. Guests are likely to fly in, stay in hotels that may not have good ventilation, eat inside restaurants, and meet up with family and friends. Even if the event that you're hosting is itself low risk, these other activities may not be. And the larger the group, the higher the risk, Milani says, because there are more chances of someone having the virus and passing it on. Prevention means using a layered approach, she says. Try to take as many precautions as possible. Distancing, staying home if you're sick, testing and masks when needed. When those measures are taken, she says, being outdoors is a wonderful way to spend time together.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.